Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we'll be talking things from the field, so anything from alfalfa to corn maturities and soybean maturities. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at a promising bioherbicide pipeline. Ag History Minute, we'll talk humus theory. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap it all up with a Field Good Friday. With me today is Bill Schomburg. No, it's Todd Schomburg. What am I talking about?
Hey to all Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy.
Do you wish Bill was here?
Nope, just
all right.
So used to saying it.
That first.
Even though I was looking right at right. You, still almost called you Bill.
Is that just like, do you get called your brother's name?
Oh, yeah, it just
often?
Happened to me all
yeah.
The time.
Yeah.
Like all through school, because my brother was older, teachers would call me
it's
Mike
our, even when your
Matt.
Very own mother calls you, like, she's even rattled off through, like, all the rest of my brother's names before getting...
Yep.
It's like you just start down a line or something.
My grandmother would do the same thing, and it's like, well, there's a smaller amount of male cousins than there are female cousins
yep.
in our family, and so it's like... When she goes off the rails and starts just throwing names out there, it's like, come on, at least just go through the guy names. Like, sometimes just hitting the girl.
Why are you
like,
saying all these names?
Chelsea, what? I'm like, no, grandma, still me. Still just me.
Yeah, I know with my kids, with the two boys, I'll get all the time. They're interchangeable in a way.
You just go, hey, you.
Hey, you, or like, I'll even like, come by.
Hit them with something so they know that they're the you yep. you're talking to.
My grandpa used to just call everybody like Mac. He like that sure. was his go-to. Any like anybody didn't know their name. He's just like, "Hey Mac, how's it going?" So I'll maybe just make up a
something
some name like that.
Hey there, you should just make it Jack because then at least 50% of the time you'll be right.
Yeah, yep.
Hey Jack. Yep, oh no, I meant your brother Jack, not you Jack.
The other Jack.
Yeah. Noah yeah. Jack.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's been a little bit damp lately.
Yeah, it's spotty, like all over. Just today talking to a guy down in Iowa who was up here demoing some tillage equipment, but he's from down there. He said, too, it's like spots down there are, you know, all planted, but there's spots hardly, you know, half done. And
sure.
you go, you know, counties away, it's very different. So it's just a weird spring that way where when it rains, it pours, and so people are really... You know, getting a lot of rain and not necessarily the amount of rain. That's part of it, enough rain. But, you know, right that they're a day away or that maybe they get started a day.
Right. It's the teasing rain.
Yes. Yeah. I that part of farming is just, it's difficult that you get this, like, you don't have any other job where, like, you know, say you don't know when you're necessarily going to start spring or doing field work. Like
right.
you can plan it all out, but then you just got to wait and be patient, and waiting is that's the hardest game to play.
Yeah. No, it's so it we get these like every other day storms that aren't adding up to a whole lot, but then like what was it, Tuesday night? It's Tuesday night.
Well, they're all mixed together.
Yeah. Whenever we got
the Tuesday night was the big one.
The strong storms that came through. It's then all of a sudden you go from like light rain to heavy rain to holy crap, we just got an inch.
Yeah, and even that storm moved faster.
Right, it
maybe
rolled
didn't
through.
Drop as much. I mean, it still was an inch, but it wasn't maybe as much. Which news did you watch? Did you watch the Dream Team or
who's the Dream Team?
Oh man, Patrick it's Powell Patrick Powell and Phil DeCastro.
Yes, that is
come on, Philly D and
Channel 11, who is recommending going to your basement, putting on your shoes, and wearing a helmet during the storm.
Just listening because they had that Michelle Melby and like the
the other guy,
the old 26 people that came over, and almost listening to them talk like say that, I couldn't tell if they were like, oh my god, really, or
like who made this graphic?
Yeah, like why do we got to keep saying to put on a helmet? And what I was thinking too is like, what type of helmet are we grabbing? Like right. a bike helmet? Do I got to get my kids like baseball helmet?
Yeah, I don't know what
just,
the best would be.
The helmet was very, they just want you to get anything hard over your head. When you saw that tornado guy in Madison, did he say helmet at all?
No, he never mentioned helmet.
No.
He had The only modification he made to his vehicle was bulletproof glass on the rear window, I think it was.
Oh. Not all, I suppose you can't make it maybe on all the windows or something.
I want to say it was the rear window for sure. I don't remember if it was like the sides too. But it surprisingly wasn't the windshield, but he said he would always like kind of park then with the back to the storm, so that whatever direction the wind was coming.
But you'd think with it swirling that could get tricky or
yeah. No, I don't think he ever planned to get stuck.
Right.
Like
right.
It was like, oh, this will protect me because the wind speeds will be high or whatever if there's flying debris. Like, that's my plan.
Yeah.
But no.
Why did they say to put your shoes on?
Broken glass.
Oh.
Which that one I can get behind because
sure.
When we had a tornado when I was a kid at our house, like, it blew out a bunch of the windows. And we had, like, carpeting in the living room. And so for, I don't even remember how long, we'd always wear shoes in the living room because there was
like, glass. You
keep finding glass and stuff in there. So yeah, that one made sense to me, and I get the concept of the helmet. Like if there's a collapse or something,
yeah.
I actually just before we started saw a thing on, I think it was on X, and I believe it was from Kokana, like a patio umbrella,
yeah,
like stabbed through a wall.
Oof.
So it's like the outside view, like it stuck in the outside of the house, and then they go to the inside view, and there's like a shelf, and it's like sticking out above the shelf. But yeah, so I get the concept. Like if your house collapses, whatever, things could be falling at you. But yeah, I don't think the average person just has like a hard hat or
no, and
like you might have a bike helmet, like you said. That might be
right. I've just never seen that.
No, it was first time
graphic like that. It was always just like get to a safe place and don't storm watch. And then my favorite was they had this one guy out in their like storm chaser Jeep.
Yep,
and that made me laugh too. Of like. You know, like
guy seemed like a serious newbie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like
maybe that's what they do. Is like, hey, newbie, you got to go.
New guy.
You got to go and try to fight tornadoes. Which at first too, when he was doing, and then he got to like a con air and he was driving around a bunch of downed trees, and that was kind of cool, actually, or cooler. But
yeah. That's gonna be a hard job too, like for the driver,
right?
Like. Imagine he's in control of like, hey, you know, let's go this way. Like, no, we're not going that
right,
way.
Right, like of what's safe or not. Yeah.
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 I'm assuming it's just the two of them in there, but I don't, yeah, maybe there's a third. Maybe there's like a producer who gets to ride
in the back
for that ride. I don't know. But yeah, so unfortunately, yeah, there were some three tornadoes, I think I saw,
that were
confirmed.
Okay. I have not heard that there was actually... I mean, they said... Because they were saying between Amaro and Winnikani that there could be... I don't know if that one was...
One. Two down south and one in Kokona, then.
Those were the confirmed ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Or the National Weather Service damaged people that came through and declared them tornadoes.
Which after the National Weather Service... After I got to talk to that guy when we had a tornado in Seymour 2 years ago, that was like less... of a process than I thought.
Sure.
Because, yeah, I was just like, he just asked questions of like, and how far the debris went. And he's just like, oh, yeah, that'd be a tornado. You know, to pick it up and go that far, that's not straight line winds or whatever.
Right.
So it's almost like he was just asking opinions and he was kind of deciding whether
based,
it was a true tornado
based off of,
or
not.
Yeah. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. The roof of your house only went 300 feet, not 350 feet.
It was like.
So.
Did debris go half a mile? Like, yeah, out there. And then he walked out there and could see it. So he's like, oh, well, that's, if it can pick it up, then it's tornado. So, yeah, it was just less, I thought there was more of a.
Sure, more like, complex.
Right. Like, he'd have to diagram or get a drone. Well, he did have, like, because we had a drone up. So he did look at those pictures, too.
But, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's. It'll be interesting, and we're in for another wet weekend the way it sounds. Like tomorrow after or Friday afternoon, now we're supposed to get some storms. Then Saturday, not much. Sunday, Monday, both chances of rain. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, hopefully, you can, spots where they don't need it can miss a few or something like that.
So it could be a soggy Memorial Day weekend for the parades and whatnot that'll be going on. So be ready, I guess.
Yeah.
So ready to get into our topic
for
today?
Yeah, let's do it, Matt.
Okay, so just kind of a grab bag of things from the field here. One of the, I guess more common questions we get to this time of year, and it is wetter, is when's it time to switch my day length of corn or beans?
So, the reason I put this in there too is because I'm not getting this question, which either makes me think guys already sort of made up their mind, or they don't want to admit what the day is or something like that. So
for them, it hasn't hit the day yet.
Well, right. And sometimes it's hard because it varies by what you got to do to get a hold of your seed person and get the seed there. And that's always hard to have like, well, how many days do I drop? Because am I going to be in next week or is it going to be 2 weeks?
Well,
or,
chances are, if you're going from 102 day and you want to go to like a 95 day, you might have to drop to like a 90 day because they don't have 90,
yes,
95.
And you don't want to make like two drops either. You know, you don't want to like drop and then it'd be 10 days and you have to like drop again. Yeah. So,
how do you feel about growing 80 day silage?
Well, right. So part of the things I was trying to go back to, what is the, you know, what are the university recs? What have our, my rec's always been the 25th of May. You start talking about it so that by June 1st, you
have a plan.
You kind of have a plan and what you're going to do. What was neat, I found a chart that listed each kind of each source and when to switch. And University of Wisconsin, their date to switch is May 21st.
Oh, so we're past that
already. Yes, which surprised me. And they want you to go 7 days earlier. So if you're planning on May 20th, and that's May 21st. So if it's later, you kind of got to add a few more days potentially, but say you're going to May 22nd, you're going to plan to a 95 day, you know, for grain, you should switch to an 88 day. University of Minnesota, they had these ranges. So between May 21st and the 28th, go 5 to 7 days earlier. And then from May 29th to June 4th, go 8 to 15 days earlier, which I thought that was quite a jump to that. You know, this isn't something where like, yeah, I'll just go down 5 days. It's like, if you're getting that much later, you really got to.
Like the 15 instead of 14.
Because I mean, 15 is an odd amount.
That,
yes.
That range, yeah. Is,
yeah, and it's not 7 to 14. Yeah. Right. South Dakota State, theirs was May 25th. Go 5 days earlier. So they're kind of one of the lesser days. And then June 5th, go 10 days earlier. Iowa State, theirs was June 1st, which that's, knowing Iowa, that's shocked me that you're further south.
Right.
So I thought it'd be like an earlier date, but, and then they didn't really define a amount to switch. So it kind of suggested 5 to 7 days, but it wasn't really defined. And then Purdue says last week of May, and which is similar to these other ones, and then they didn't define a day length to drop either. Which probably Purdue's, you know, there's a
Indiana,
lot of corn breeders, and that's kind of a, I thought they'd have maybe a more rule of thumb. But I think down there, when you get late, they'll, you know, more prevent plant potentially, or they'll switch to beans, or it's a different game sometimes there than, you know, when we get into Wisconsin or some of these other areas where we have forages. So this is more of a grain for, you know, corn grain guideline than it is for silage.
Right.
I mean, you still want to think about it for silage, especially if you're pushing really long day. But silage obviously a lot more forgiving than grain in maturity that way.
I wonder if with Indiana being, you know, the north-south geography, if they just found it too difficult, like northern Indiana, maybe it'd be a certain day that they'd figure different than south Indiana. So they're just like, hey, after this, just
that's true.
Just
that
change,
that the geography in that whole state, you're way different from.
No, I mean, when I was there this past winter for a conference, it was like sunshine and rain in Indianapolis, but then driving north, got into like snow and everything else. So it was just
it's
very
too
different.
Yeah,
very different lines of weather through that state.
Minnesota did have a kind of a little bit more thorough charts that I liked, but they had also like last recommended planting dates. So you don't, like after these dates, we just don't recommend to plant corn. So it was for central and northern Minnesota for grain, it was June 5th. And then southern Minnesota for grain was June 10th. And I think those would you could cross into Wisconsin here, you know, for some of those sort of guidelines. And then for silage, obviously it's different. Theirs was for central and northern Minnesota, June 12th. In southern Minnesota, June 20th. And I thought those were pretty good for silage, too, because sometimes that's hard. Wow, you know, every farm for sale just got a story where their dad planted July 4th.
Yep.
In some year, you know, way back when, and well, no, and it worked, and it does work, but you just start sometimes sacrificing a lot of yields. It's just making sure, okay, no, we know we need more corn silage tons, so let's kind of push it past that date. But I thought June 20th too was, you know, it's pretty late into June. You're not talking the 15th or something.
And some of that comes from manure management, and rather than leaving open field, you might spread on a field until about the 4th of July, then plant your late silage. And
we that too is, we've done it where you take a first cutting of hay and plant corn after that, and you know what you're giving up for yield a little bit. Minnesota also had a chart, two different studies that it kind of summarized. In May 25th, you're at about a 87% from one study and 92% from a different study of percent of maximum grain yield. So you're giving up around 10%, which that's shocking. That I thought it'd be higher than that. I thought it'd be, you know, May 25th, I thought you'd be giving up, you know, 15, 20%, something like that. So sure. I thought that was a fair number, that, you know, you're maybe not giving up as much. And then May 30th, it goes to about 85% of maximum yield. June 4th, it goes to 80%. And then June 9th, it drops to kind of like 75%. So you could see there is that sort of bigger drop in a June.
Yeah.
Especially there, it's, you know, June 4th. You know, May 30th is kind of like June 1st. So you're still getting 85% of your yield then. And this is more specific to do with grain. So I think as well on silage, you maybe aren't giving up quite as much. I mean, you're still giving up some, but maybe not quite as much.
I mean, the one upside to later planting is usually the corn gets out of the ground faster because the soils have warmed up. Not every year, but most of the time, by the time you hit June, it's the daytime temps are warm enough that it
gets going.
It gets more into that, like, you seeing your corn twice in 1 week thing.
Yeah. And that goes to the next thing to consider, was sometimes you pull out starter, like, oh, the soil's warmed up, I don't need starter anymore. But you actually want to get that ground, that corn out of the ground as quick as you can. So early in the spring, starter is more beneficial. Once you get in the middle, maybe not as beneficial, but then late, it turns back here where it's quite beneficial again.
Well, and it's banded fertilizer too. You're getting it close to the seed and the plant, so there's definitely benefits to having it there.
Right.
Even if it's not the starter effect, quote unquote.
Right. Just getting it going. And then one other thing to consider is, any of the, like in that percent chart that I just said, talked about, is any of the advantages in that mid-May can disappear when the soils are too wet. So say you mudded it in mid-May, or, you know, the conditions after are still not great. You're going to have percent yield loss from that as well. That's, this chart is kind of using like, nope, conditions were perfect mid-May and pretty good after and everything.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, this time of year, you know, sometimes if you maybe mudded it in mid-May, it's not like you're getting 100% either. So it's something to think about.
Well, we got the starter in, but our furrow didn't close because it's too wet.
Right. Yeah.
And then the rain washed our starter away.
So, yeah, that's where we're at with just kind of making sure you're having conversations with everybody about it. When you get back in the field, get a little more cab time, be something to think about. Okay, should I pivot some crop here from, you know, maybe the fields that you had planned as corn silage are ready now and the corn grain ones aren't? Maybe pivot some of those so you're planting the corn grain earlier. Maybe you're, you know, flipping things around. That gets hard because you plan all winter and then you got to change everything, but it's still something to think about. So
yeah, I mean, worst case scenario too, if you're looking for forage or something, you can always plant a sorghum or something in there that, you know, if you're worried about grain yield, at least get something off those acres rather than just leaving them fallow for the rest of the season. It's also hay time.
Yeah. That's always fun when it's like, hey, we're
everything
behind.
Just comes all at once.
It all gets together. So that's been tricky too, of like, there's this age old question, am I better off planting corn or harvesting first crop, all that. And the research shows you're better off getting first crop in correctly, but and we briefly talked this on a previous episode, but I do think that's a tricky question. Is both is the answer? So, But there too is like, even now we're getting to a tricky time of like, as this alfalfa is getting mature more, we've already kind of maybe missed your quality window that you wanted. Well, that's tricky too, is now the goal is just not getting it rained on too, and do right. all you can to do that. So it feels like there's that old Confucius quote, Matt, that is, you know, the when is the best time to plant a tree? Have you ever heard the...
I've heard this, yes.
Yes. What have you heard the saying as?
I don't remember exactly. It's like, when was the best time to tree? Well, yesterday, but when's the next best time? Today.
Yeah, so basically it says, when was the best time 10 years ago? When is the next best time today? Yeah. And like, I feel like cutting hay has that feel when we get wet sides, is like you constantly are chasing or second guessing, like, and not that the best time is always today, but we're striving for such high quality in these diets that if you maybe stumble over it a bit, it is, you know, like I said, the best time was maybe a week ago but you can't go back.
Yeah.
And through that window, it was interesting to watch guys that did get cut. Is some guys were able to get hay off and not get it rained on, and it worked. But there's enough guys that cut and it did get rained on. So that was a tough thing too. You always kind of second guess, like, oh man, I could have made that window, but you still, and then you get frustrated or like, well, I'm just not going to watch the weather, or we just got to cut, and that can be a good attitude sometimes. But you, to me, using weather data is still as accurate as you can have it be. I mean, obviously we know that they're not perfect, not even far from, but at least you can just try your best to get that window when you can. But it does feel like that just gets harder and harder all the time. And granted, we came off a year last year where you may dry hay a lot of the crops and not get rained on.
Yeah, you cut in the morning and chop in the afternoon last year.
Yeah.
And that's what leads into us talking about, you know, being a wetter year, is you're going to pull up more of that moisture from the ground because we do have some of that extra moisture. So it is in some ways going to slow down the cut to chop window.
Correct.
So you got to kind of watch that. And it all depends on acreage too. If you know you can... If you can get it in and get maybe it's a little wetter than you want it to, but at least you can get done before it gets rained on. Maybe there is value to that compared to cutting 1,000 acres and getting it all rained on and having to ted it like 6 times.
No, there is ways too to try to like sneak out, you know, okay, I'm going to cut this 200-300 acres or what, and just work at it in bunches too. But that's also hard. So yeah, it's just. The hay.
What part do we do without acid on the chopper?
No, that'd be sweet if you could cut it, you know, chop it wetter. It would make this scenario way easier. But yeah, it's just one of those deals that you try to have conversations with your custom harvester, with your crew. Then you throw in a holiday weekend in there for guys, and sometimes it's easier to find certain guys and harder to find others. So it just. We always try, and even this year it was like, oh, hay will be off well before Memorial Day, we don't got to worry about it, and then it's like, nope, not off in time. So
yeah, no, obviously you just got to do the best you can. Sometimes you got to pull the trigger and live with the results, and that's farming.
Yeah,
so there you go, a little bit of a grab bag there on thinking about your corn day lengths and soybeans too. I mean, obviously the later you get, soybeans are a little bit different than corn when it comes to maturities, but then also thinking about that first crop corn, you know, ideally you could do both at the same time if you're getting a custom harvester. But if you got to do it yourself, sometimes you got to make a call and figure out what's going to be the best option for you. All right. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. A promising bioherbicide pipeline is in the works. Talking about the team at Harp Bio, they're making progress with their bioherbicide platform, which could introduce new ways to tackle resistant weeds. In the past 5 years, Harp has pinpointed possibilities of using extracts from a series of plants, including several in the mentha family. By the end of 2024, the company leaders expect to have market-ready formulations and are seeking EPA registration on necessary products. They're moving from the tech to development phase. They are targeting two segments, organic farming, which will use plant extracts, and conventional production, which will use biorational products. The organic lineup will include pre-emergence and post-emergence products used by using the plant extracts for active ingredients. In their conventional production, HARP sees its products as being tank mix partners with a wide range of chemistries. To date, the company has more than 1,000 greenhouse trials and field trials. Results show the HARP bioherbicide platform can help overcome more than 30 resistant weed species. For example, in combination with dicamba, we're seeing great efficacy, and it's a promising part of our value to bring value to the chemistries that were once highly effective back into the tank mix. So they've continued to raise investments as of last year and are hopefully going to have a product coming to market soon. So now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. It's humus, not hummus, so we're not eating a dip. The idea of hummus, The humus theory is the idea that increasing soil organic matter, either by plant residues or animal manures, increased soil fertility and hence crop yields, has been realized for centuries and thus was born into the humus theory. According to this theory, plants feed upon substances which are similar to them in nature. Organic matter of the soil, or the soil humus, was regarded as the chief nutrient for plants and the major source of soil fertility. Albrecht Thayer is credited with formulating the theory. Opposition to the humus theory began to come in late 1700s. Experiments with humus extracts led by Weigmann and Polstroff to conclude that humus plays an insignificant role in plant nutrition. Justus von Liebig and Carl Sprengel discuss their discovery of the law of the minimum, that yield is proportional to the amount of the most limiting nutrient, comes into play as well, and this new law based on chemistry went on to debunk the humus theory. And I think to a certain extent, it's, you know, not that organic matter doesn't play an important part. We don't want to be saying that, but it's a combination of factors that help. The organic matter helps kind of other parts of plant nutrition, may not specifically feeding the plant, but it helps water holding capacity and other things that can be beneficial.
It's like the original Mythbusters.
Right.
So I wouldn't call it a myth for sure.
It's plausible.
It's and obviously it's just what they said is you needed like a living thing, and then that would, they didn't say like it wasn't the nutrients inside of that living thing breaking down. So it's what I like about it is it's kind of, the humus theory is more about biology. So you're right to say it was debunked. That's not true. It was just, no, the biology breaks down into the chemistry part, and
yeah,
you have that part. So
it's more of a cooperative system than anyone realized in through all this. I mean, both were right in some ways and wrong in other ways. So
right. All right. Thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's real easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio in Apple Podcasts, or on your Android phone, download an app like Podcast Addict. And you can listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Just go to tilthag.com/podcast. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
Thanks, Todd. Now we'll get into our cool beans. That's corny, and some current events. So cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Our cool beans this week. Here's what's in the farm bill as far as what they're considering for dairy farming. The House draft contains big changes to existing programs. One of the changes involves the DMC, or Dairy Margin Coverage Program. So production history will reflect highest amount during 21, 22, and 23. Production cap for Tier 1 producers will be raised from 5 million pounds to 6 million pounds. A 25% discount on DMC premiums will be available for operations that enroll in coverage for the life of the farm bill.
The part I liked in here was about whole milk.
Yep, I was just getting to that.
Yeah, I didn't mean to jump again, but yeah, they're bringing it back.
Bringing back whole milk for schools under the miscellaneous provisions. Provision to allow schools participating in the National School Lunch Program to once again offer whole milk.
Yeah, it's on page 942.
Yes.
So it is like, it is down there.
And that is a lot of reading for right. people to do. But yeah, right now schools and national lunch program have to offer milk that aligns with the latest dietary guidelines for Americans. And according to existing USDA regulations, only fat-free or low-fat milk is permissible. Can be either flavored or unflavored. So this draft will bring back milk that actually tastes like milk. So there you go. That's corny this week. Canadian wildfires never fully died. So that's fantastic. Now they're back with a vengeance. The wrath of the Canadian wildfires, something Canada is familiar with. After a historic season, 2024 is off to an active start, with some fire forecasters saying this year's wildfire threat could rival last year's. So 2023 was a historic wildfire season for Canada. They absolutely shattered all records. Millions upon millions of acres of forest were burnt, according to Matt McDonald, the lead fire weather forecaster for the British Columbia Wildlife Service, or Wildfire Service, sorry. McDonald says those blazes burn across the country from coast to coast, top to bottom. All 13 provinces and territories have significant wildfire on the landscape. Particularly here in Western Canada and British Columbia, 1.8 million acres were burned last season. So it's tremendously ground-shattering year, and hoping that it doesn't come to that this year. But fortunately, the fires that were there maybe subsided, I guess would be the best way to say it. They were dormant for a while.
That's wild, like under snow, yeah. How they just kind of laid there dormant is wild. Like
it's kind of like peat bogs. I know that's the thing here in Wisconsin. Sure. Like it'll smolder under the surface, but so you won't really know it's burning until it starts smoking again.
That's wild, yeah.
So it's crazy what it can do. But so, yeah, unfortunately, we may not be done, because once the snow melted and some of the wind picked up, then those holdover fires just kind of kicked up again. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully we don't get as many days of haze as we did last year, but this could be some as we move forward. And now we'll wrap things up with our Feel Good Friday. So this week we're going to talk a sticky trick, which involves new glue spray that kills plant pests without chemicals. So instead of spraying insecticide, you can spray some stickum on your leaves. Tiny sticky droplets sprayed on crops to trap pests could be a green alternative to chemical pesticides. The insect glue, which is produced from edible oils, was inspired by plants such as sundews that use the strategy to capture their prey. Key advantage of physical pesticides over toxic pesticides is that pests are highly unlikely to evolve resistance, as this would require them to develop much larger and stronger bodies.
Did we just challenge
Hulk
them?
Yes. Yeah. We're now going to have Hulk aphids. Like, they'll just be huge, very muscular. But yeah, pests destroy large amounts of food, and chemical pesticide use has risen by about 50% in the last three decades. So there are concerns about the amount of pesticides being used out there. So these droplets have been tested on the Western flower thrip, which is known to attack more than 500 species of vegetable, fruit, and ornamental crops. More than 60% of the thrips were captured within 2 days of the test, and the drops remained sticky for weeks.
Ooh.
So scouting fields might become more difficult if we go this route.
Did you ever scout a field when it's heavy with soybean aphid?
And
your jeans are like, because they get that sap, mm-hmm. So your jeans would like turn like to plastic. And yeah, that's what I'm picturing of like walking these, and you're just, maybe it just stick to you. Like you couldn't even move in the beans, you're just stuck. But that's great. I mean, you want it out there for a long time, but I would guess it'd last like a week.
Yeah, so they're still doing field trials to kind of see exactly how long they can expect it to last. I imagine they have to do field trials with rain, fall, and stuff too, to see if it washes off after a certain amount of time. But yeah, being oil-based, I would imagine it's probably a little less likely to do that. They're also testing to see if scents can be incorporated to attract bugs to the droplets, which I would think if it's on a plant that the insect wants to eat, that's pretty good.
It'd be the attractant. Why bring
more?
Right.
Especially if at this point they're talking about 60% of control. Well, if you're attracting more insects to the field,
yeah,
60% of a higher number is still only 60%. And like, yeah.
I wonder if you spray like a week before. I wonder what like the pre-harvest on alfalfa, something like this would be.
Where right, you wouldn't want it sticky.
Like, I don't know,
as you're harvesting.
But say you had a bunch of bugs stick into it. If your like protein levels would be increased of your yeah. alfalfa, maybe or something like that.
Could be.
It's a neat idea for a lot of other crops. But yeah, it'd be interesting to know. How that, yeah, does that just make it gum up in the chopper more because you put this stickum on it, or what does it do for other effects for different things?
Yeah, they also mentioned dust being a potential issue as the dust gets stuck to it, if that's going to reduce the efficacy of the drugs.
Well, and the photosynthesis of the plant and, ability, yeah.
And muck up the plant a little bit, yeah. So, yeah, there's no cost estimates as of yet, but research is still going on, so it'll be interesting to see where this goes. Would be kind of a cool thing, I think, to see tested, and might have a wide range of uses even beyond just production agriculture. So, all right. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, Todd.
Thanks for having us, Matt. Having me, Matt.
Yes.
Thanks for having me.
Is there there's just somebody in your pocket? Do you have a pet in your pocket?
Thanks for having you and I for this time. I appreciate
this time
it.
We've had together today. Yes. We'll hug it out later. All right.
Play the music.
There we go. This week, we talked considering switching day lengths for and what to consider there for your corn and beans, as well as the first crop versus alfalfa harvest conundrum that you may find yourself in this year. In our spotlight, we took a look at promising bioherbicides working their way to market potentially soon. Ag History Minute, we talked the humus theory. Cool Beans this week was the Farm Bill progress that's being made and some of the things included in there. That's Corny was the Canadian wildfires may be back with a vengeance this year. And our Field Good Friday was the potential of a new sticky trap type spray for crops, gardens, and who knows what else. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.